previous weeks, we've been talking in a little series on passages about those issues in life when suddenly something has come to an end and how we deal with it becomes very, very important. Sometimes these transitions are things that absolutely can never be recovered. Sometimes they can be recovered, but many times they cannot. So when something ends, we face something new. We face a new normal. And how we get to that new normal is very, very critical. We've talked about the endings, how difficult they can be. We've talked about the neutral zone where we move away from that crisis to the point that we can begin to sort out our minds and we can begin to sort out our emotions. And then we begin talking about new beginnings when we really ultimately discover that this is not going to kill me. I'm not going to end right here over this, but there is something out there for me. And God gives us that revelation and that awareness. And we all have these in our lives. And unfortunately, the last one you had probably is not the last one you will have. Or the one that you're in right now is probably not the last one that you'll ever be in. And it's been kind of amazing to me how many of you have come to me and talked about how you relate to this conversation on transition. Some of you telling me I'm in one of those right now, and I'm really being helped as we talk about it. We have used Joseph and all those traumatic moments of his life that are so very clear, but he literally did gain a new beginning. And in his circumstance, ultimately, he did regain his father, and he did regain fellowship with his brothers. And that's a point that's very difficult to make in a study like this, because sometimes the hardest of these transitions are those that involve death. Someone has passed from this life. They have passed away from us. It's a husband, a wife, a child, a dear friend. We have lost somebody, and that is something that we cannot reverse. That's probably, perhaps, arguably, the most stringent and severe transition that many will ever go through. But it's important that we understand that not all transitions deal with death as it relates to human life. It may well deal with an ending of something in our life, a job, a location, a relationship. Those are all endings, but not all transitions deal with the human separation that death brings. However, that is a big one, that is huge, and we can learn so much from that moment in that circumstance that helps us in those that are arguably less severe, where the loss of a loved one has not been involved. Very early in this study, I was thinking and looking for some way to introduce some practicality to what we were talking about. And I began thinking back over the past months and years, watching and being around Peggy Musgrove in this very congregation as we watched her and Daryl go through that very significant season in their life that ultimately resulted in Daryl walking into the presence of the Lord Jesus. And I just felt very strongly about that and saw a lot of lessons that would be very good for us out of it. And, you know, almost simultaneous with me wanting to talk to Peggy, she came and talked to me. And we rather mutually agreed that we were going to have her come and just share with you tonight in a very practical way about transitions and passages in her life in a way that we hope will be beneficial to you. And then next week, I'm going to wrap it all up for us. So, Peggy, we love you and appreciate you and welcome you as a member of our family. And let's give her... Well, I was going to say three cheers, but I guess a hand clap is good enough.
That's good. Thank you, Don, and what a privilege it is to be with you. This is very much my family. I've been in this church now something like 20 years, And it's just a joy to be with you. And I want to acknowledge the excellent teaching Don has done on this series. I have not attended all the classes because I've been across the hall. I've been in a couple of times, but I have listened to all of them online. And I would suggest if you have not been able to be in them, that you get online and listen to them. They're very, very valuable on dealing with transitions in life. And as you know, I've been very public before all of you. I've been living in transition now for actually, well, when we get to it, I'll tell you, I think it's been 20 years, but the last 5 years for sure, and then the last 2 years in very, very sequestered, I guess, transition. I've learned some things. And we're going to be talking primarily about death, and I thought, isn't this ironic? We sing Christmas carols, and I'm going to talk about death. But, you know, Christmas is what it's about. That's why we can say we can get through death, is because the Savior came, Emmanuel, God with us. And I thank the Lord for his presence, and I want to say up front, because I don't want to miss it, you to miss it through any of the things I'm going to talk about, that it is true. He is Emmanuel. He is with us. He is with us all the way. I have a personal little love affair with the moon, the man on the moon too. But I love to see the moon. And one night as I was looking at the beautiful full moon, the Lord spoke to me. I say that and it sounds so presumptuous. I had this idea, and I assume God was speaking to me, that the moon is like his presence. It's always there. You don't always see it. Or sometimes you see just what my granddaughter calls the thumbnail of God, just the little slice of the moon. We think, well, maybe God is here. God is always here. Whether we see him in full moon radiance or not, God is always with us. Now, I'm going to tell you what I've learned about death, but I wanted... Don says that beginnings start with endings, so I'm going to start the end. I'm going to tell you what I've learned first, okay? And this is the end. I've learned death is not a gentleman. He shows up when he wants to. He takes who he wants to, when he wants to, and how he wants to. He is not a gentleman. Death does not play fair. My mother told me that. My dad died, and 2 years later, my brother died. And my mother said it's much harder to lose a son than to lose your spouse. Because you're supposed to die, your children are not supposed to die before you do. Death is not fair. But I've also learned that death is a defeated foe. Now, we're told that in Scripture, but I've learned that that is true. But death has to be dealt with, and I'll be mentioning that along the way, some of these places. And dealing with death helps us handle life. And I think that all the things that I'm saying, most of the things, death is the irreversible change, but many changes, they're like death, you know, when we have things that we lose in life. And if we can deal with death, then we're prepared to live. And so the principles apply. So I want to talk to you tonight about, now Don asked me, or we discussed that I would talk about Daryl's passing, and I will get to that. But, you know, life is not single layer. And you're never dealing with just one experience. You always bring all the other experiences you have had in that realm to this experience. And you also have all the things that are going on in your life along with this experience. So to talk about my dealing with death during the last years that I've been with Daryl, you need to know what I learned about death in the 75 or 80 years before that, you know. So let me just run through a few things with you. First, you know, I'm very old. I'm 83, and so I've been around longer than most of you. And I've seen a lot of death. In fact, all of my family, all my birth family is dead. My grandparents, my parents, my aunts, my uncles, all three of my brothers are all dead, and I've outlived all of them. So my brother's wives also. So here I am. I'm still hanging on. I don't know why, but here I am. Just something a little fun on the side here. When I realized I was the oldest one in our family, I was the matriarch. So I wrote to all my nieces and nephews, and I said, you know, I'm the last one, and I want to keep us all together. So I get this email back from one of my nieces. Dear Mommy, send money. So I gave up on that. I want to just run you quickly. Like I said, everybody in my family's dead. And four members of my family died at home in kind of unusual circumstances. And I just want to walk through this with you and tell you, let you know what I learned along the way. It started when I was 18. I was about to graduate from community college, and I know you're going to do the math on that and think, what were you doing at 18 graduating from community college? It wasn't that I was smart. It's a matter of math. They started me young, I get out young. It's that simple. And they started me young, so I'm getting out of college, 2 years of college when I'm 18. It's graduation week. I've got parties to go to and tests to take and commencement to think about, and my grandmother dies. Now, I lived with my grandmother 1 year, and so she was very dear to me, but I was 18, and I was busy, and I was enjoying life. I was working, and my dad usually picked me up, and he didn't pick me up, so I thought, well, I know the way he comes, so I would walk home, and I walked home. My grandmother lived across the street, and went to our house. Nobody was there. I walked across the street to see my dad holding my grandmother's hand, and she was in the throes of death. Now, my other grandparents had died, but I was young, really young, and it didn't affect me much. So I'm 18, the first time you really see death. But I'm 18, and, you know, I'm enjoying life, and life is good, and life is fun, and life is... And somehow, my grandmother's death didn't really register with me, you know. I took the very immature attitude that death is a mystery and we'll solve it sometime. We'll talk about it sometime. And I think this is an attitude that's pretty prevalent in our world. People live, people die. Let's don't bother talk about it. Let's bury them and get on with life. We've got life to live. Let's don't think about death. But I learned, even on that early occasion, that death is a defeated foe, but death must be dealt with. That was in the spring. That fall, I went to CBC, and I well remember, we had three people in a room in those days, and I was on the top bunk, and I well remember one day just bursting in tears, and my roommate said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I'm thinking about my grandmother dying. Did you ever see anybody die?" And they hadn't. And see, from that early experience, I learned death is a mystery, but you can't put it off. You need to deal with it. You need to deal with the situation as it comes. And I thought I had learned that lesson well, but later I had to learn it again. My life went on. It went on like a storybook. You know, you go to college, and then you get married, and then you have kids, and then you get a job, and then you go to churches, and you pastor churches, all those good things. And that was kind of how my life went. And on Daryl's 40th birthday, he was elected as district secretary treasurer of the Kansas district, and so he went into district office, and life's good. In fact, Daryl had developed a photography habit. I thanked him for that habit. It wasn't beer. You know, once I put a sign in the closet where all his photography stuff was, and I thought, look at all that stuff. So I put a sign on it. At least it's not beer cans. So that was his habit. Daryl had gone with, I don't even remember who he'd gone with, but he had been gone, and I think it was 6 weeks. I really do think it was 6 weeks. They had gone on a photographic trip to Africa. And he was coming home. He was going to come home on Palm Sunday, and we were going to celebrate Easter, and my folks were coming, and I was so glad Daryl was coming home. Well, some of you in this room knew my dad, I think. I'm not sure if any of you did. You really missed it if you didn't know my dad. I tell people, my mother, if life was a maypole, my mother would be the maypole, and my dad would be the one leading the dance around it. You know, he was energetic, he was fun, he made life interesting. He didn't just come, he arrived. And so on the Saturday, before Daryl is going to come on Palm Sunday, here he is, horn honking, get out, you can run out and you see him, get him in the house. Where's the kids? The kids are in bed. Where's the coffee? You get the coffee, I'll get the kids. He goes, pull the kids out of bed. Lots of giggles, lots of laughs, lots of fun. Comes and sits down with coffee. Gets the coffee to hear. And says, you know, I don't feel good. Set the coffee down. Never drank any. I think I'll lay down here on the floor. Lay down on the floor. Says, do you have a doctor that would come to the house? I said, Daddy, this is a city. You know, doctors don't come to houses. He said, I don't want to go to the hospital again. Pretty soon he says, go ahead, call the ambulance. But before the ambulance was there, we saw the massive heart attack. We saw him go. They felt a slight pulse because, you know, they have to have a pulse or they can't take him in. I rode the ambulance. I was there when they said, your father's gone. I was the one who came home and told my mother, your husband is dead, told my children, your grandpa is dead. I'm the one who calls his brothers. I'm the one who call my brothers. I'm the one who deal with the police. Because when a person dies out of town with no doctor in attendance, it's a police case. I'm the one. And I don't know where Daryl is. He didn't call when he was supposed to call. So all the time I'm dealing with my mom, the siblings, what to do with about my dad's body, I'm thinking, where is Daryl? Why is he not calling? Why is he not calling? Because he was supposed to be coming home. Let me see how that story went. My brother flew in with the mortician to get my dad's body. So my brother drove my mom's car back, took my mom, and I'm left in a house alone where my dad has died on the floor with my two kids. The worst night of my life. Daryl did get home. He didn't call me when he was supposed to. We didn't have cell phones, you know, and computers and all that stuff back then 40 years ago. Worst night of my life. We went home. Daryl got, I was telling somebody this. They said, did Daryl get here? Yeah, he got here the next day. It's 200 miles to where my parents live. We drove out. We had the funeral. The next Sunday was Easter, and I well remember going to church that Easter morning, seeing those lilies, singing Bill Gaither's. The song had just come out, Because He Lives, I Can Face Tomorrow, sensing the presence of the Lord with me, coming home, and getting on with life. Now, this is an illustration, Don, of what you said. You can go on, and it's not the same as moving on. And, you know, it was Easter. That means district council will be in 2 weeks. That means we're in the district office. That means life has got to go on. And that means school is going to be out. And that means you get on with it. I don't know if I can explain this. Just take my word for it. 17 years later, Daryl has another invitation to Africa. The person that he was supposed to go with couldn't go. So he said, I think you should go. I said, I don't want to go to Africa. And he says, yeah, go with me. No, I don't want to. So he came back a couple weeks. I want you to go to Africa. I don't want to go to Africa. Get somebody else to go. Finally, he said, Peg, please go. I want you to go to Africa. I said, okay, here's the deal. You make the trip. You make all the plans. You figure it out. And you tell me, tonight, you need to pack your bags because tomorrow we're going to Africa. Just don't talk to me about it, and I'll go. Which is not really the way you plan overseas trips. You all, you seasoned people. Somewhere along the way there, again, I'm so hesitant to say, but I think it was the Spirit of God who spoke to my heart. Do you know why you don't want to go to Africa? Africa is a trigger word. Daryl was coming home from Africa when your dad died. You have not dealt with your dad's death. 17 years. Now, I can't tell you what was going on in my heart, but I can tell you there was a hardness in my heart. And I, you know, Kubler-Ross says there's anger at sometimes. I don't know if I was angry at God. I don't think I was. I mean, I'm the, you know, the district secretary treasurer's wife. You know, but I distinctly remember in prayer letting go of whatever it was in my heart. The hurt, the anger, the disappointment. Because, see, death was coming closer all the time. With my grandmother's death, I was no longer the third generation, I was the second generation. And with my father's death, it's getting close to my generation. It was probably some fear there. All I know is we can lock hurts in our heart, and it will affect our behavior, and we may not realize it until we come up against it. And we may not even realize what's happening to us. But God's Spirit is faithful, and I believe He will show us if there are things that we need to deal with. I don't think we need to get into morbid introspection, saying, oh dear, what have I got in my heart that I haven't? Don't worry about it. The Spirit of God will deal with you and will show you if there are things in your heart that need to be let go. All I know is I had freedom when I realized that I was carrying a wound in my heart. Jesus wants to bind up your wounds. That's Psalm 147. He wants to bind up wounds. We should not lock them in our hearts. And I think this is an example of what you talked about in one of the sessions, that we can go on with life but not really deal with the circumstance. Now, let's move on. There's one more I want to talk to you about. Death had come one generation closer, and it did it again. It was about 12 years. Okay, now think about this. And this is where I want us to see that we carry so much in our lives. I'm telling you, my dad died. It was 17 years before I realized I was carrying the hurt of that. My mother-in-law died 12 years after my dad. So I approach her death carrying this wound and this hurt and this hardness about my dad's death, okay? And this is all beneath the surface. I'm Mrs. Nice Gal in the public. And I think we can carry hard things in our heart. It's not that we're angry at people. We're just hurting, and we don't know what it's about. Always haven't faced it. We've got several superintendents here in the room. And I think they will all confirm this, that district council, what happens is you take a deep breath and you get on a conveyor belt and you get through a district council and you don't think of anything else. You don't do anything else. You just, and it's over. Well, this council was like that. You know, we'd gotten through it. It was up. It was the last afternoon of district council, and we were set up. We would go from the business meeting to the service for the dinner for the ordination candidates, and then the evening service of ordination. I had gone out and checked to be sure everything was ready for the dinner and come back and sat in the back of the business meeting. So I'm sitting there, thinking, it's almost over, we're going to make it. When somebody from the church office came to me and said, we just got a phone call from the district office that your mother-in-law's neighbor called the district office and said her blinds are down. Well, I knew my mother-in-law gave a signal to the neighbor across the street every morning that when she got up. And this was like 3:30 in the afternoon. So Daryl's up there conducting the business meeting. I'm on the back row of church. There's nothing for me to do but go to my mother-in-law's house, about 20 minutes away. When I got there, neighbors were all out in the yard. My husband's niece was in the yard, and she worked at the district office, so she was aware of this. And she said, we can't get in, the doors are locked. I said, I've got a key, not a problem. Now you put my key in, deadbolt. We couldn't get in. Now, you don't always make the wisest decisions. I don't know if this was the right decision. I'm just telling you what I did. I said, I'm going in. Laura said, we should call the police. And I'm thinking, call the police, get down here, have to identify, you have the right. I'm going in. So in my nice district council clothes with my high heel shoes, I went up on the porch, and I don't remember about the screen. There must have been a screen. All I remember is taking off my high heels, knocking out the window, pulling all the glass, and climbing through the window in my nice district council suit with a straight skirt. I went through the living room, dining room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, and that's where she was on the floor, dead. So once again, I'm the one to call the coroner, call the police. It's a police case. Somebody dies without attendance. Call the siblings, take care of everything. By then, it's late in the day. In fact, it's night. My brother-in-law came, we boarded up the window, the body was gone, all the relatives were called, all the right people were called, and I'm alone. And I'm telling you this story for this reason. I am faced with a choice of going back to church or go home to an empty house. And as tired and distraught, and I can't even explain how I felt at that point, but I went back to I thought, I do not want to be alone. I need the body of Christ. And we talk about rituals being important. You talked about that, passages. But I want to go beyond the rituals and say the presence. The presence of God's people is so important when people are distraught, when they're bereaved, when they're tired, when they have reached the end. We need you. We need each other. And that church, some of you were there, it's the Old Central Assembly in Wichita. The sanctuary is here, and there was a kind of a side room over here. I went in and sat on the back of the side room. The service is kind of winding down, but I had to be with God's people. I needed God's people at that point. And I just say that to tell you the importance of ministering to people in their need. Now, other deaths followed. In the next years, these deaths that I've told you about are all the sudden, the dramatic deaths. We had the long, slow deaths, and that's the kind of death Daryl had. And am I doing all right on time, Don? Are we okay? Daryl's death was, my mother's death was the long, slow death, 4 years. I went every month or 6 weeks, drove it for 4 years. My brother's had the long, slow death. Daryl's death was the long, slow death. Some people have said, how long did you know? I didn't then, but I do now believe that when Daryl told me in 1992, I can't do this anymore, and he kept telling me that, I can't do this anymore, I can't do this anymore. And finally, it got through to me that he couldn't do this anymore, and he called the presbyters in a conference call and resigned as district superintendent. Most of our friends thought we were crazy. I thought we were crazy. We made the decision, and I've learned since that dementia can affect you as long as 20 years ahead of time. And I really believe that Daryl knew in his heart that he was not who he had been, and he wanted to make a change. We moved here. We went into the national office. I continue to see changes in Daryl. You know, I became the women's director, and a little later, they were going to do it at the same time, but, you know, it takes time to get new things done, and he didn't go in for about 6 months after I did, and he resigned before I did. And I knew he's not doing this with the energy, with creativity. I thought he was tired, but I believe the dementia was working. But all I want to say here to this part of this stage is death sometimes is a process. It takes a long time. And this is where we have so much to learn, something to learn. What I want to say about this in this period, I'm trying to think how best to say it. It was 20 years, and then the next 10 years, we just did things, and I saw the gradual withdrawal. And then, you know, during this time, we kept saying, we need to move out of this big house and into a small house. And I want you to see now from here how much God takes care of us. And this is what I want to say to every one of you. God will take care of you through every day, all the way. He will take care of you. Now, see, I was seeing this withdrawal in Daryl, and we didn't say, oh, we've got to do this. No, we said, well, someday we're going to move out of this big house and move into the little house. And one day there's an open house. It's right across the street from our daughter. Let's go see it. Wow, this is a 3-bedroom house on one floor. I could live in this house. And so we bought it on the spot. And then we thought, oops, we got a house for sale. But do you know that house sold in 3 weeks, less than 3 weeks? We closed on one on the 12th and one on the 29th, whatever that is. That house sold just before the market dropped, the same spring. So God was working, like I say, even when we don't see the moon, it's there. And even when we don't realize God is working, God is there. So we moved into the house in March 1993. October 93, Daryl is on medication. And it was downhill from there. First, it's dropping off. Not going out for photo shoots. Not wanting to get together with friends. And you know, he was Mr. Social. Not wanting to get together with friends. Telling me his camera didn't work. He really needed a new one. And incidentally, he got a new one. What did I know? And it went from there, kept going down. And you all saw it. You knew it. And you were so kind, and you were so gracious, and you were so caring. And you were so loving to him, always making him feel welcome if he would come, you know. And we came as long as we could. I just tell you, the worst it got, because of the night I woke up and all the lights were on, and I thought, oh, he must have gone to the bathroom by himself. But I didn't hear anything. I thought, I better go see. But he wasn't there, or in the bedroom, or in the office, or in the living room, dining room, kitchen. So I got on the phone to call my daughter across the street. I said, your dad is gone. This is 3:00 in the morning. It's 25 degrees outside. Your dad is gone. I have no idea where he is. And, you know, you just kind of, they live across the street. You just kind of go to the window. I said, Darla, he's lying out in the street. I can see him. My son-in-law got there before I did. I had to put on shoes and a robe. My son-in-law came like he was. And we got him in. God is merciful. How he got down the steps. It was 25 degrees. He's barefoot in his pajamas, but not a broken bone from a fall. No, nothing. God took care of us is all I can say. Then that was about Thanksgiving time. I don't remember. Somewhere along the way, I wanted my girls to know that I was resting in the Lord, that God was taking care of me, and the prayer for the caregivers is so important. And I wrote an article, which those of you who attended his funeral, it was on the back of the brochure. But 3 points I want to tell you, and I think Ray's going to put some of it up on the wall for us. This is Ray, I want just the three titles, yeah. This is what I learned early on, and now this is dated April 2011. This is a year and a half before Daryl died. But I think it's so important that we get the right mindset when we go through difficult times. Acceptance of the situation gives purpose. And if you read Kubler-Ross, and I know there's a lot of different opinions about her writings about death. But she says we need to work through until we can accept. And in Daryl's case, I accepted before. Acceptance gives purpose. And then I'm going to read the whole paragraph. It was too much on the screen. Acceptance precludes anger and its children, resentment and self-pity. When I see the care of my husband as the most important thing I can do, I have purpose. I remember what Jesus said, inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. The second thing I learned is patience in all circumstance is the key to peace. It enables tolerance and endurance. Otherwise, we live in constant frustration. We cope with the present, not comparing with what has been or what might be. I remember Jesus said, "Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." The third thing I learned is a loving relationship is the highest virtue. It endures when gold has lost its glitter and fame has faded. And as I clean the bathroom again and explain what we're doing for the fourth time, I remember a commitment I made for better or worse. But the last thing I learned, the light of God's presence dispels death's shadow. The greatest thing I have learned is that in spite of the darkness of death's shadow, we live in the light of God's presence. I learned the truth of the psalm, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Death is casting its shadow on us daily, but the presence of the one who conquered death casts a light on everything we endure, giving us a panoramic view of the kingdom beyond the valley where death shall be no more. Now I want to move into the closing days of Daryl's life when we don't see death as a process, but we see death as a victory, something to rejoice over. Now, this little writing I wrote was April 2011, and we continued declining till the next year in February. I spent the whole night with Daryl with total out of control, and I knew Darla got up at 6, so I called at 6, and I said, Darla, I have to have help. I can't go on. And, you know, she said, well, call the doctor, and call the doctor, and he said, you have two choices. He said, he'll live about 2 weeks. You've got two choices, hospice or skilled nursing. So I opted for skilled nursing until I learned that's $250 a day and hospice is free. And I blundered through several things, but I ended up with hospice. And it was a marvelous decision. I fretted over having people come to my house every day, but they were wonderful. This was on Thursday. The next Tuesday, Jeff was coming, Pastor Jeff, and I called a friend. I said, would you come out and answer the phone while Pastor is here? And she said, I can't, but I've got somebody I'll bring with you. And I said, ah. And she said, come on, she'll be a blessing. And I said, well, okay, I've got to have help. So she brought Ruthie. And Ruthie, as you've seen, Ruthie's sitting back here looking at me, eyeballing me, and I'm going to be nice, Ruthie, and because you're wonderful. Ruthie was in transition, and I was in transition, and my friend said, I'll bring Ruthie. And Ruthie stayed 2 hours, and you can't believe what that woman did in 2 hours. She just put my house in order. And so my friend called back in a few days and said, how's Daryl? And I said, oh, not good. And she said, well, I'm going out of town. I wanted to check. I said, well, what about Ruthie? And she said, oh, she'll be here in my house. And I thought, she's not going to be doing anything in your house. Why didn't she come to my house? And Ruthie stayed, I think, 17 months. Was it Ruthie? Actually, we're not sure just exactly when she moved out. A miracle of God's provision. That's what I'm telling you, a miracle of God's provision. So from that point on, from bringing Ruthie into my home, and I saw what God was doing, I lived in the presence and the miracle-working power of God. God takes care of us, people. God takes care of us. And Ruthie and I have been on a journey, and she's now living on her own and working on her own and doing great, but we still spend plenty of time together. The miracle of God's provision, the miracle of his presence. Now I want to tell you about his actual home going in the minutes that are left here. They told us, we'll tell you when he's going to die. And they said, okay, it'll be this week. And then they said, it'll be 3 days. And then they said, it'll be today. And that day will be exactly a year, a week from tonight. So I'm living this again as I'm talking. There's a common attitude in our culture, and I heard a secular speaker say this. Life is like getting on a sailboat, and you get out in the ocean, and it goes down. And I thought, no, life is not like that for the Christian. And I like George Wood. He told this story at Daryl's memorial service. He said, I think life is like being at the shore, and someone is on a boat, and we're telling them goodbye. But over there, there's a crowd saying, welcome home. And that was how Daryl's passing was. And this is what I wanted to tell you. They had said, Daryl will die today. And so the kids took off work and sat around the house, and we didn't see anything different. But he went to sleep. And pretty after, you know, we'd been there. The kids had naps. We went in and out of his room. But about 3 o'clock, his breathing changed. And the kid, Diane, I think, said, his breathing changed. Let's go in there. And we could tell he's struggling. And finally we realized we're at the end. They had said he's going to die today. And they had said to me, you need to release him. So I said, Daryl, everybody is here. Everybody's here. The kids are all here. I'm here. You've been a good father. You've been a good husband. You've been a good grandfather. It's time for you to go be with Jesus. And you know what? He relaxed immediately. Now, a dying man is not going to change if Jesus is not there. That gave me such assurance. If that sailboat was going down, he would have still been struggling. I think he heard those people on the other shore that were saying, welcome. And I said, Daryl, please tell my mother and dad hello. And Diane says, he's smiling. He's relaxed. He's resting. We saw him rest, go to sleep in the arms of Jesus. And that gave me such assurance. And when I think about his death, there's a quote from Pilgrim Progress that I like. It was Mr. Honest that was going, and he was dying. And they said, of whom it was said, when the day that he must go hence has come, many accompanying him to the riverside, into which as he went, he said, death, where is thy sting? And he went down deeper, and he said, grave, where is thy victory? So he passed over, and all the trumpets sounded on the other side. And I believe that's what happened when Daryl rested in the arms of Jesus. So I say all of that just to say thank you. Thank you for your care. Thank you for your concern. Thank you for your prayers. I hope this has been an illustration of what Don has been telling us. It's true. The end starts a new beginning, and I have a new beginning. I've been working through some of those steps this year. I'm ready to do something that will symbol my new life. Over our fireplace is Daryl's finest picture, a picture of a lion. Some of you have seen it. And so we have all the Africa stuff on my fireplace. And I decided it's time for the lion to go back with the other missions pictures. And we're going to put a flower scene over the fireplace. You said we have to have a symbol of a new beginning. It's going to be my symbol. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your love, your encouragement, and making it possible that I could go from this ending to a new beginning.